Right, so setting the scene then. Right, so this is obviously 10-year anniversary podcast, and we've been chatting since 2016. Weirdly enough, never spoke, never met. It's kind of weird, isn't it, if you think
It
about
is
it?
odd. It is odd. This is the first time. I don't think we've even had phone calls. We've just exchanged voicemails and stuff.
Voice notes was about it. I think we had like an attempt to meet up. It must have been like 2017, I reckon. There was a like
Some sort of convention or something was there that.
like a play expo. I remember I was doing those quite regular at the time, and I don't know why I didn't go to that. It was in London as well, wasn't it? I think you went. I'm pretty sure you went.
Yeah, because I think that's. I remember going there with them. We bumped into, what's his name? Chris Hill from Games You Loved and Darren, and they were just plying us with Asahi because he had some sort of company. He was like, "Oh, do you want another Asahi?" And I was like, "Yeah, because it's about 6 quid a can. I'll have all the ones you can bring out."
Keep them coming, mate. Keep them coming. And it's funny enough, he contacted me on Twitter recently. I
Oh
can't
yeah.
remember why. And then I said we were doing this podcast. He's like, "Oh yeah, say hello to Britt. Make sure you say hello. He's a good lad and all this." And I
Oh
was like,
yeah.
"Oh yeah, top guy, top guy." But again, I've
Oh
never
you.
met him. I've never. It's all through Twitter, really. It's he was on the they were on the scene at the same time as I started the Twitter account, I think. And that's how I've come to sort of know them through social media, which is crazy. But yeah, never having actually spoke to them. It's pretty mad.
Yeah, we met him through the conventions, and he loves handhelds, so Faye and him get on quite well through all the sort of handheld tiger stuff. But he's a nice guy. He is constantly on Twitter, that man. He is
Oh,
like,
mate, yeah,
it's
absolutely. I
that's
mean,
like another full-time job.
the numbers they've got. I mean, they did that really early as well. I mean, we've been stuck at around about 19,000 followers for a fair while, like 5, 6 years. I've played 100K within the first 2 or 3 years, I think, of them being on Twitter. And I was just like, "Whoa, how are you doing that?" And I was on there like regular, proper regular. I was posting
Yeah.
left, right, and center, because that was my main focus at the time. When we started the website, it was kind of right, let's build up this Twitter following, and then I know that we've got an audience then, and I'll just put a lot of time into that, and then just put the odd article onto the website. But then and then I've sort of realized after a while, actually, Twitter isn't the be all and end all. It's
Yeah.
good to meet people, but it's not really the greatest thing to get your website out there a lot of the time, because people don't really click on links or
To
whatever.
go out of Twitter, yeah, it's all about what's in the feed.
It's all like community stuff rather than actual, right, this is my website, go there please, so yeah. But it, I mean, that the reason the big thing about Twitter is I wouldn't have got in contact with you if it weren't for Twitter. I think it was Faye's account, then it was kind of like you guys did an article, did you? I can't remember. Did you do a
In
review?
Retro Gamer, we did a collector's corner in Retro Gamer.
That's
It's true.
it. Yeah.
Another guy, he's
Yeah.
a really nice guy, Graham Mason. He did the
Yeah.
collector's course, and we should be recorded. I've just realized this is all going to come out on the actual thing, isn't it?
Okay.
We're just leaping ahead of ourselves. We should probably,
Right. Yeah. Let's jump to the. So okay, should we go from the bit where I'll just sort of say how I set it up, how I set up the website. Let's do that bit.
go on then.
Yeah, so point in my life in 2012 was when our first child was born, Leah. And she came along, and then I realized, oh my God, there is not much time in the day nowadays. So if I do have spare time, I need to like use it wisely. And weirdly enough, I decided to set up a website, but not a video games website, which is quite weird. It was kind of like a time when I was into like it's like I hated my job, and I wanted
Pogs, was he going to say you're into pogs? Is that where this is going?
Oh, Pogs, the collection is there. It's just unreal. Look,
Website,
yeah, where's me Pogs gone? No.
Yeah,
No,
let me get my Tazos out actually while you're.
it was I set up a property website, right? But it was like helping people to buy their first homes. So because me and B had just done that, and I had all this knowledge about, this is how you research it, and these are the places you need to go. And I could never find a website where it was all in one place.
Okay.
So I just kind of like thought, well, that's what I'm going to do then. I'm just going to put all my spare time efforts into building a website and learning how to do that. And good job I did it, because then I learned all the mistakes of like building a website, and so probably a good like year I reckon I was doing that for. And then it come to a point when I was kind of like, there's not much you can write about in a property website if you're doing, especially as it's a research website. So it weren't like I was breaking news, you know, on property, which would have been quite boring. I wouldn't have really, really been into that. So I just kind of like thought, right, okay, I know how to do a website now. What could I do? Something I really love and have always loved. And it was going to be football, because that's one of the other things I love.
You do like football. I've noticed that you don't mind a bit of football.
Yeah, plenty of football. Yeah. So I was kind of like, well, there's so many of those out there. And at the time, there wasn't that much retro gaming stuff. Well, there was, but it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't so cliche or whatever. You know, there wasn't that much. It was kind of a very small scene, it felt like, at the time. So I thought, right, that's what I'll do. And then it was a case of, okay, think of a name and just go into that, you know, 123 Reg, you know, where you go in and check the domain names. And I was just...
Oh, like, yes, yes, yes.
Basically going there and just like banging in a load of different sort of video game related names, as many as I could think of at the time. And it's like, I was like, Games Almanac was one, and they're all cool. Taken, you know. And then all of a sudden it was kind of like, well, a storage place, you know. A place where you would store video games, but somewhere a bit different. And then I just thought, all right, Games Freeze, let's try that out. And then the more I said it, the more I thought, oh, that's all right, that's pretty cool.
So, yeah, and I think it's fun. It's called like Games Freezer. It's like you got the freeze. I don't know, the Z. Yeah. It's like a nice, smooth running word. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, and it's like, it's maybe a bit more memorable as well, so people would remember it. So I just thought, yeah, just go with that. And then, set up the website from there. And it was it's all, as you know, it's all on Blogger. So it's easy to do, because you don't really have to, mess around with like HTML and stuff. You can, and I have. And like, that's
well, this, because I've never, like, for the people listening, I've never, you do everything. Like, I'll sort of wrangle the reviews together from sort of the little team we've got, but I've never updated the website, so I've never seen the back end of it. But it is easy, is it? You just kind of
It's kind of like what you see is what you get type of setup, and you kind of put a layout on there, and they have like various widgets that you can create use, and then create, I don't know, a search box. So okay, right, search button, you can name the search box and pop it on there. And there's a few little bits you can do. You can get into the code and you can sort of say, oh, I'd like that to be rounded rather than square, you know. So at the very start, I was doing a lot of that, you know, finding little bits of snippets of code and then going in the back end and sort of changing it to look nice, and then just kept fiddling with that. But then after a point, you sort of reach a point where, well, I'm quite happy with it, and it hasn't changed in God knows how many years, you know.
I was going to say, actually, because obviously that was 2013, the 10th year. We have to point out as well that this is obviously the 10-year celebration of Games Freezer, but we've been trying to do this podcast since last May. So it's kind of the 11th, so it's like 10 and a bit. But yeah, because I came on in 2016, and the website is much more, it feels more sort of fine-tuned. But yeah, it doesn't seem vastly different, I don't think.
No, ripped some stuff out that never really got used. There was a lot of widgets and things. There was a period of time where it took ages for it to load. Do you remember you texted me one morning and said, I'm trying to get on the website, it just seems to take forever. And then I had a look, and it was like really on-off as a whether you could get in straight away. So I ripped out a load of widgets that were, like I say, don't think they were being used. They were right down the bottom of the page. That's probably why it was taking so long to load.
I think as well, one of the big differences between 2013 and now is, I mean, I guess like I only really access Games Freezer through my phone. So you can, you know, so if it's like, if it was really busy, you'd be like, oh, there's a lot here. But the fact that it's kind of, and I really like the article at 5 p.m. every day, because it's like focused on one article. It's like, boom, right, this is the thing for the day. You're not just getting lost in the scroll.
Yeah, and I think that was the decision we made a few years back, to sort of say, right, we're going to do one. We'll just do one a day, because there was a point where I was trying, before you came on, I think, I was trying to sort of bash out, free, right, I've got a whole period of time, let's do three in this day, and then, right, okay, tomorrow I did nothing, you know, because I'm all tired from doing three and trying to, and the quality was shit as well, and it was kind of like, oh, mate, this is not great, you know, you have to sort of take a step back.
Tuning up content, I remember when I first started doing the reviews, it's still fun, but at the time it was so exciting that you want to just get as much as you can, but it's just not sustainable, like you say, with life and stuff. And I think I can imagine that's why a lot of sites burn themselves out, because it's like, you know, they get a few mates in and stuff, and then everyone just throws it in for the first month, and then people tweak off, and then you're left with like, oh no, I've just got to do all this content like two or three times a day, but where's the quality control?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and we've found like we've had people come on and do reviews for us, and they maybe last like two or three reviews, and then they realize, oh, it's not actually that easy, you know, to sit down, digest the game, and then create some words for it, and it
formulate your thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's why I do a lot of 10-minute taster stuff now, like the video segment we do on the Games Freezer and put on the YouTube channels, because I'm able to do that. And I've got a flow going where I can do them, but I don't have to write. And because I'm working at the same time, it can be hard to try and get, you know, that balance. Because in the evening, my evenings are pretty much spent, you know. So I have to sort of like work out, right, how can I get my content out, but, you know, not take up too much of my day as well as run the site. So it's kind of, it's quite a tough one.
What Rich means is he comes on from work, slams the briefcase down, 8 cans of Hofmeister, Liverpool 1996 season DVD on VHS.
Another Tuesday, mate. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's kind of like, it is hard. It is hard to do unless you sort of like set something that's realistic. You know, you have to be realistic. You have to get it out there. And we've pivoted big time as well, because like I said at the start, it was really retro gaming that I was focusing on when I set that up originally. And it was because I thought, wow, SNES, you know, was well into my SNES games and all the rest of it. And that was my favourite console. And I was always like, right, this would be the thing that I can do going forward. But then again, it reaches a point, especially when it's just one of you, where you run out of things to write about, you know. It's kind of like, what do I write about next?
I realized that you talking about the sort of retro gaming boom, because I kind of feel like we've almost like seen the bubble explode and burst in the last 10 years, because Faye and I, Kingdom of Cots on Twitter, we kind of got on just as a, you know, a shared love of collecting sort of retro gaming and stuff, and the prices have skyrocketed, which is a different conversation. But what it's like, those games have been talked about to death.
Yeah,
you know. So, and I think the fact that, I mean, I don't know how long I joined in 2016. I don't know how long between 2013 and 2016 it was for you before the website sort of bled out into covering indie games. Because since I've been a part of it, we get inundated with game requests for coverage. Like, we've always been drowning in them, like, especially PC.
Yeah, big time, yeah.
I wish I could cover them all. I wish, you know, we could, but it's so hard to...
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, we know that list of PC games that's sitting there, that's like, rock. Maybe one day I'll get to that one, you know, maybe one day.
Yeah.
You have to kind of, like, prioritise against each one and sort of say, oh, well, that looks maybe the better one, you know, I'll go with that, or that's the one that's associated with this. And it's just tough,
and there's the ones that always, I would say, frighten me off whenever I see 4X games, like space strategy titles, real-time strategy games and visual novels. And it's just the time factor. You know that, like, in the time it would take me to get 30 hours in that, I could have covered like 10 or 15 others, and it's just a balance sometimes.
Yeah, that's it. No, you're right. And I suppose that's why the 10-minute taster can work as well, because I don't have to complete it. You know, I can play it, give people a taste of what it's like, and then sort of people can make a decision from that, you know. So it's,
On the back of that, I got a question for you. What game that you've covered in the last 10 years have you found it hardest to move? You know, like you do the review, then you keep playing it, and you're like, oh, I kind of do want to stop playing this. And then you just get like sucked into it. Is there one that's really pulled you in?
Well, it's the Greedfall one was one where I went in and I thought, oh, this is just going to be, you know, second rate sort of RPG. It's got, I mean, because I love RPGs, as you know, like I love Fallout, that type of RPG, you know. I've just got into Skyrim after however long it's been out and realised how great that is as well. And yeah, I'm a sucker for them. And then Greedfall, I thought, oh, you know, it's going to be kind of second rate. And then I started playing it, and I think I did a 10-minute taster for it. I'm pretty sure I did. And then, yeah, beyond that, I just couldn't put it down. It was literally like, right, clear everything else. That's all I'm playing now.
Yeah.
Play it to completion sort of thing.
It has to happen sometimes. There's,
yeah.
I'm the same for RPGs. That there's been some really nice surprises that I found the last... Because this is ties into... I've realised what... When it comes to the end of your... I didn't actually do one this year, but when it comes to the end of your articles, I realise I don't want to talk about the highest rated ones I've done. I kind of want to talk about the ones that like still stick in my memory. In 2023, I played a game called The Last Orokru, which was released, did middling to poor, and then they kind of did a huge update that kind of made it less Dark Souls-y and much more accessible with like a difficulty slider, which is the one thing that's kind of been missing for me in games like Elden Ring. Like there's a point where you hit a wall and think, I just can't, this is either beyond my skill set or beyond my time management. It was like quite a funny game, and it was quite flawed, but I played it straight through because I thought, oh my god, I'm actually playing a Souls game that I can adjust to suit me, and it was like over the biggest hurdle.
Yeah. Which is weird that it's frowned upon to have the slider in there, you know, for these Souls games. You can't have that because it's not then a Souls game. Let's get real, you know?
Yeah, it's fine because all you have to do is not adjust it if you want to play it on the hardest mode. I've never really got into trophies, but I've my cousin who Rig, who now sort of does some stuff for the site, he will like habitually platinum games on his PS5. Wow. And it's like I don't, when that flashes up on the Xbox, you know, I think I don't really I'm not
You don't get the endorphin hit anymore. I used to when it was on the Xbox 360 up. But although I never used to chase them, but when it did come up, I was like, "Ooh, yeah, that's cool." You know,
like a little clock, like
a little ding, and then it used to pop up, didn't it? And then you're like, "Oh, that's cool," and then it'd disappear. Yeah, I was never a chaser of them, but
have you had it where you have them and you for review and you're playing them? And it comes up with like a shining diamond, and it's like, and it says 0.01% of people have got this, and you think, fucking right. And then you realize you've got a pre-release copy, and there's probably a little bit, and you're like, that's actually just me doing this, isn't it?
This is it. Yeah, I'm the only bloke playing this at this moment in time. Literally, some of these games, we're probably the only people that play some of them.
Definitely some of the smaller ones.
Yeah, big time. Man.
So yeah. Should we go through the questions so people can get to know a little bit about the role?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. So we set some questions. It was probably like May last year, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I looked at these, I thought, do I remember these? But yeah, they're all pretty much the same. Nothing's changed in the last year for me.
I mentioned a game about an acrobat when I was looking at it earlier, and I don't even recall that at all. It was like, we'll go into the questions in a minute, but the first one up is... first video game memory, and I'd mentioned Acrobat, and I'm like, what the hell was that? So I deleted it out. I was like, I ain't got a clue what that was about. I don't know if you might know it. I think you've got a better game knowledge than me as well, because just to give a bit of background, my growing up through video games has always been heavily focused on football games, obviously with a football connection, and that was to the detriment of playing a lot of other different types or genres of games. Like as I was growing up, I was just always looking for the next football one. Oh, can it be as good as that? Can it be as good as this? And it really narrowed.
And I suppose you've got the football playing games and then all the football management games as well. And it's not like you're into your platformers where you can bounce off them. It's like you can get hips deep into those games for a long time.
And they rarely change, and they kind of just change in number, you know. That's pretty much it, and then there's a little iteration against it, and then it's once you're hooked, you are going to be on that same drip feed of football and God knows what else. So
what sticks in your mind then in terms of up to say the 1632 bit is like the best football game that when you think back to you think, oh, that was good. That was
my
still...
my mate Johnny had a Commodore 64, and he had one cartridge for it, and the one cartridge that he had, which we thought was great, that he had a cartridge that could go into a C64. I didn't realize at the time that
existed.
Yeah. Yeah, that little, yeah, that little slot, didn't it?
It was good because it was like an instant load. I remember I only ever had Terminator 2, which wasn't a great game, but I love the fact that it was like you put it in, boom, off you go.
Yeah, away you go. And there, this was international soccer, which was absolutely fantastic. And it was, yeah, side-scroller, sort of not much to it. I don't even think there was a tournament mode in it, but it was a great two-player game. And you felt like you were actually controlling the players, because a lot of the time in those early ones, you just slam the buttons and hope for the best. You know, there was no real skill to it. But I think you could even trap the ball from memory. I think if you pressed the button, like you obviously had the single button on the C64 controller, you could control the ball and then pass it off, I think, from memory. That was like a big thing, you know, whereas previous other games would just be like, like I say, just hit and hope, try and get the ball in. And it was rarely as good as what it looked like on the box, obviously. That's the other cliche.
The football game I remember playing, like the two really on the Mega Drive that I played the most were, was it called World Cup Italia 90 on the Mega
Games? Do you know when you kick the ball, me and my mate always used to call it jelly football, because it's like...
It was that sound.
Depending on how hard you kicked it, I think it might have made a slightly more, you know, like if it was harder.
And I know this game is bad, but I played a lot of it. I think just because it was the one game I had, football game I had on the Mega Drive. I'm not a football fan. Was European Club Soccer?
Oh yeah. I played a lot of that. Funnily enough, I think it was called something else on the Amiga. I played it on the Amiga. It might have been Manchester United in Europe, I think.
Oh really? Oh okay.
I think they like reskinned it for Manchester United, I'm pretty sure. And it's just, yeah, it's like a side scroller sort of, yeah, like quite cool graphics actually, like chunky,
yeah,
like
big sprites. Yeah. But, I've just played it. I like play it now, and it just seems quite kind of clunky, especially when you compare it to something like, because the big one on the Amiga, my uncle used to play, because I kind of got his Amiga in the end. Was Sensible Soccer was the one that like everyone loved. That was the one that everyone loved.
Yeah, I remember I went round to my mate Craig's house to play that for the first time. And him and his brother absolutely spanked me, because like, once you were good at it and the person is playing it for the first time, you've got no chance as that person playing for the first time. That's what made me want to buy an Amiga, basically. It was Sensible Soccer.
Really?
Yeah. And then he introduced me to Monkey Island as well. Monkey Island 2 at the time, actually. So it was kind of like, wow. And look, the 12 discs. I was like, 12 discs, that's amazing, you know. I need a disc box. That's basically...
You're flicking through them like a Rolodex. You kind of think like you're getting value for money from them then.
Yeah.
I think, I was curious, actually, because I've got an Amiga Mini and I've kind of hacked it now. And I was... Apparently, there's a game called The Adventures of Willy Beamish. 28 discs.
Whoa. What, sure point and click? Point and click to it? Oh, Jesus, man.
Imagine that.
Madness. I remember I tried to copy Monkey Island 2. And that was 12 discs, like I say. But then you had to also do the... Do you remember the spinny pirate wheel thing?
Oh, yes, yes.
So you had to copy that out. So I was doing like a... I think we were doing photocopies. We might have gone to the school photocopier and just like sort of snuck in there and photocopied that off and then tried to cut the little windows out.
Oh, yeah, so you can...
Oh my god!
So much dedication. I think I remember my dad too. My Rupert, who used to do some reviews for us, but doesn't anymore. He said in Monkey Island 2, there's a section if you played on the Amiga where I don't know if you remember. There's a bit where you've got to enter a spitting contest.
Yeah, the spitting contest.
You go to spit, and Guybrush sort of spits, and then it says insert disc 8, and then you put disc 8 in, and it loads, and then there's a close up of some spit going across the screen, and then it says insert disc 7 again. It's literally just a disc to watch some spit fly. Screen. Brilliant.
Well, do you reckon the devs were fucking with people? Like, that is unbelievable. Like,
I don't know if it was like one of those, like one of the animated scenes in it. So I don't know if they like put it all on that,
like FMV, but
it
was just... or something. Maybe.
Can you imagine an FMV game on disc? Gee, I'd love to know there's an Amiga game out there. Like someone has said, oh yeah, I've got Fallout New Vegas now ported to the Amiga, like 450 discs. Here we go. Just a stack.
That was the reason. So yeah, back like to football games and stuff, that was Sensi Soccer was definitely the one that got me into the Amiga, and that was good times.
They They still do updates for the sequel, apparently, Sensible World of Soccer. You can still download
modern season. So I've downloaded the one off of GOG because they've got it on there, Sensible Soccer. And then, yeah, like you say, there's an update. It's free. And you go onto the website and you get like a, it's almost like a downloader, and it's like a little extra program that sits on your desktop. And as long as you've got the GOG version in the background, you can then click on this button and say, right, I want to play this season with these updates. And then it loads it all up for you, and it has all the amended crowds and chants and stadiums and all that. It's unreal. And there's a competitive scene as well. Like, they're really heavily, I think it's a Dutch guy who does it. He's on Twitter. And yeah, competitive scene, and yeah, they they're absolutely brilliant. I mean, for it to still have that community now, it's just mental, absolutely. Mental.
I love it. I love it when people are hip-steep into like one game. There's just
the forever game, yeah. But I couldn't do it. I don't think I'm more of a. Well, I used to be. I would always be Pez, and my PS1, PS2, just lived with a Pro Evolution Soccer disc in it, where, and it would be, all right, the next one comes out, right, take that disc out, put it, and that would be in there for 12 months, you know, which is ridiculous. Again, just narrowed my my ability to play anything else.
I thought you crazy London wide boys would be all over Wipeout. I thought you'd have Wipeout 2097 in there.
And that bypassed me. I knew of it, and because I used to buy the magazines and whatnot, but I just used to read about these games, but then not play them, you know, because I would always have Pez in there, or just trying to think what I did play.
Because you collect. Is it Mean Machines you're collecting at the moment?
Because you
had an interest in other games. It was just football. Oh, perfect.
That was
football,
today, yeah.
That was just the one that always dragged you in, was it? That
yeah,
was...
yeah. I mean, it was always Mean Machines and Super Play each month, depending on what I was owning at the time. But yeah, and it was always looking out for the next football game because Kickoff was so cool, and everyone wanted Kickoff on the console. We just used to wait for this like announcement release, and it was like month on month, me and my friend in the playground, John Pang, good old John. John actually wrote for us for a while. I don't know.
He did
like a series, didn't he? Must have been about 20 or 30 articles actually, but me and him used to be very much into our magazines, but all we was ever waiting for was Kickoff, and then it finally came out, and it was crap. It was absolute dog shit.
Was one of them got a kick in the by the critics, and
It was a SNES version, and it wasn't very good. And weirdly enough, the version that came out on Master System, which I think was probably done by another guy or another dev, was brilliant. So it just goes to show, like, depending on what it came out on and what console or whatever, you could get a massively different game, you know. A worse or better game, but
funny you should say that, because recently I was playing Sonic on the Master System, and I forgot that it's effectively a completely different game. I really like, and I remember thinking, Christ, I totally forgot this was just a different. Still cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember it got loads of good reviews. I think I had a. Did I have a Master System at the time? I think I'd got rid of my Master System actually by then. But I think I'd got rid of it for a Mega Drive at that point to then play Sonic, I think, from memory. And I loved Sonic. But then I ended up selling the Mega Drive on pretty quickly afterwards, because I was like, I think I wanted either to put some money towards getting an Amiga or to so as I could get Sensible Soccer, you know. So that was probably my driving force of getting rid of it.
I was really quite lucky, because I had quite a big family, so there was lots of uncles and stuff, so I was always just bequeathed things, so which we'll get into when we do the questions. But yeah, so I kind of had a really good run of just getting given lots of cool stuff.
That's quality. I just used to play other stuff at my mate's houses. I mean, that was the one. So my friend Paul, I've known him since I was like 3 years old or whatever, but he always had everything, you know. He had an Amiga in one corner, and he had a brother as well, so he had a Mega Drive, and then they had the NES that was just given to him. So they had all these like consoles set up, and they had a room in the back of the house that was just their room, kind of like a downstairs room, and we'd set it up as a den basically, just to play games. And we used to go car boot sales, and this was probably when we was sort of like 12 or whatever, and you could pick up a Speccy for a fiver with 100 cassettes, and we used to work our way through all the games, or we bought an Atari 2600 once, and we tried to fix it. We plugged it into the socket, and it just blew out the whole house, basically.
Really?
Yeah. It was like, oh, well, if we put these wires here, you know, it must be, it'll work, it'll be all right. And it's like, bang, you know, straight away. His mum was like, oh, she was livid. This was like during the summer holidays or whatever. We just knocked out the whole house of power. But yeah, those were the days.
The Caboot Sale days were amazing, because I remember going there and like, getting a briefcase filled with Amiga games. Maybe not all were legal, yeah. Who knows? But like, I just remember that being like my Sunday, like getting back at like 9 o'clock and just like, just trying them out, seeing which ones worked. And
brilliant. Yeah.
Generally good, really good times.
There must be like a point in time where we'd hit the sweet spot of car boot sales where you could still get, you know, pick up a bargain or pick up. People just thought, oh, these ain't worth anything. I just need to get rid of them.
It was pre-internet, basically, before people could go on and price stuff up easily online. I think, that's worth, you know. Because I remember the last, I would say, true bargain, the last two real bargains I got were in the old flat we lived in.
Yeah.
Faye got delivered. I don't know if you remember these. They were called Characteristics. Those joysticks that were shaped like The Simpsons or Terminator or an alien one. And I opened it in front of this guy, the concierge who was doing the post.
Yeah.
And he said, I've got a load of Amiga stuff you can have. It's just a matter of my wife's always telling me to get rid of it. And he gave me all of these printers and stuff like that, which we've now got in storage, and a load of discs with MOD written on them. And I said, oh, when I put these discs in, they asked for a password. And he said, oh, I used to work in the army. That's Ministry of Defence. Can you get rid of those? I was like, oh, yeah, I'll bid them. No, I didn't. I kept them. But, fantastic. The other one was a guy on Facebook saying, oh, yeah, this is going back about 8 years. And he was like, oh, memories. Shame to see these go into the skip today. And it was a boxed, sealed Spectrum Plus 2 with a James Bond pack with a light gun. And I said, can I have that? And he was like, yeah. And I turned at me when I've got these as well. And it was a boxed Mega Drive 2 with the games inside. And I said, he was like, do you want any money for them? He was like, no, I was going to bin them. And I was so excited. I think he thought there was something wrong with me. Like, he was like, you sure you don't want to bin them?
You're right,
no,
mate.
This is fine. I was kind of thinking he's going to click at someone. So, yeah, 80 quid. Yeah. But it was bizarre. I was putting them in the car. I was thinking, why would anyone bin those?
Like, my God. One of my worst regrets was... Not my worst regret, but one of the things that I regret not doing is I was at the tip one day doing the usual tip run, and there's just some person walking towards me, and I had a load of shit in my hand, and they just had a couple of things, but they were holding Nintendo GameCube by the handle, just about to throw it in, and I was almost like, what? And they just walked past me. And it went in, and I was like, why didn't I just say something? Like, even if it doesn't work, I don't care. You can't be throwing that away. Like, at least repurpose it or do something with it. You can't just lob that in.
Yeah, it just seems, because there are a finite amount of them kicking around. And with the Amiga stuff as well, like, our stuff has been in storage since we had our son, so about 3 years. And I remember before they went in, I kind of had one last session about Amiga, and I must have about 400 discs, and easily 70% of them just don't work. Like, they just demagnetize and fail. So,
yeah,
it is.
Do you have a lot of big box stuff as well? Or?
We had about two or three shelves worth of big box stuff. There is all the storage.
Oh, yeah, I think I've probably seen your shelves, haven't I? Yeah, I've probably fawned over your shelves.
Good look at my good bloody look at my shelves. But yeah, so every when we get Sunday a bigger place, we're going to get them on every Sunday, trousers down, shelves out. But yeah, so they are going to come out one day because I do miss them.
Yeah, nice. They're just lovely to look at, you know. It's just
it's nice to have it, and you go in there and like pull it off and think, well, that sounds ominous. You take it off the shelf and think,
yeah.
Like, oh yeah, Chubby Gristle. I haven't played that for a while. You know, it's just odd little things, odd little moments.
Yeah. It's all good. I suppose that's why I keep all these bloody magazines on the shelves. I mean, it's just out of shop, but that's why I've got all them there. It's just nice just to pick one off the shelf every now and again and have a little flick through and remember. I mean, I obviously remember every magazine as well. I used to get it and read it from cover to cover, or I used to get it maybe on a Friday and then save it for Saturday. Like, well, I'm not reading this till Saturday, so I can sit down for and a good two,
really,
3 hours and
really
go,
digest it.
Yeah, really, like, from cover to cover, every word, even the stuff I wasn't interested in, you know, I'd still read it. So I wasn't really ever like a big anime fan, but there's like a large section in Superplay, for example, like 3 or 4 pages, and I used to read it all the way through and just sort of, I don't know, it just felt felt good, you know. But yeah, I mean, nowadays it's different. But yeah, no, it's good times, good times. The physical stuff, yeah,
definitely. Yeah, certainly physical stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, right, should we get into these questions?
Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm excited. Start?
Right. Okay. So here we go. So first question. First video game memory. So I'll start. I think I already mentioned it, but I might not have mentioned it when we pressed record. So I'll sort of go for it. So initially, the one I do remember, and it's kind of vague, but I think probably every home had one anyway. But it's the one of those Pong machines, and I think it was probably one of those Beanotone.
Yeah.
Pong machines that mum and dad
had got. With like two dials, either on like really curly wires that you would. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're, I suppose they're kind of trying to be almost like a 2600, because they've got those little up and down switches, you know, like those metal switches, and you had to choose the game. So yeah,
and it was like Stickman, wasn't it? And it was like it was squash, football. They were all similar. They were all very similar.
Just basically Pong, but with two paddles sometimes, and you know, it's just like, well, this is just literally the same game. But yeah, I remember Dad setting it up for my sister, because I was a bit too young to play it, I think. But I remember being in awe of it, and that was obviously like early 80s time, I reckon. And then the other one around, probably around little when I was a little bit older, was that there's a Philips Video Pack console, which is like, again, it's kind of like a almost like a remote control, and it's got a stick, like a joystick, but it's more like a metal prong that just sits up, and it's got a number pad as well, from memory. And
that's crazy.
It's really weird. It's really odd. I mean, I had to check it online just to make sure I wasn't like dreaming, and it does look like that. And I just like, it's literally like a remote control with a joystick in it and then some numbers on it. And I used to play this golf game with my mate Johnny, and I think that's how I learned the rules of golf. I'm pretty sure.
Oh really?
It's kind of like, oh right, so if I take more shots than what it says up there, that means that's the way I kind of I think that's the way I'll get into golf.
I just like the thought that in the early 80s, there were teenagers dreaming of like Cali LeBrock and dreaming of flying or being rich, but not rich. No,
no, no.
He dreams about possibly fictional Philips products.
I've got no facts to base this on apart from a distant memory of when I was about 5 years old. In between bouts of wrestling with my mate Johnny, it was a few games of Philips Video Pack golf. So,
you talk about that's how you learn to play golf. I over the last couple of years, I played, I think it was on the GameCube actually, our PS2, Disney Golf, right?
Oh, yeah.
It is the hardest golf game I've ever played. Oh, yeah, because you know, like when you play most golf games, you say you're teeing off and it's like it gives you a wood. Or like you're in a bunker, it'll set you up aiming at the green with a sandwich. Disney Golf, it doesn't give a fuck about you. It'll like, you'll land and it'll start you off facing the car park with a putter and you're in the rough. So you're like, what? It's awful. And it's really quick as well. The power bar is like super quick. So there's no fun in it. But yeah, if you're Disney Golf, don't ever play it.
If you emulate golf games as well, I find that the speeds are off in terms of the power gauge. So it tends to be too fast. But I don't know, it's probably because of the processing power of your PC and the maybe the emulator or something like that. But you're trying to hit it, and whereas on the original hardware you'd be fine.
Are you talking about actual golf on the PS1? Because I can assure you it was that fast on actual.
Oh really?
It was Peter Alice, because it was Peter Alice in the commentary, and it would be like really quiet, and then you'd completely mess up a shot, and it would just, as it was sailing towards the trees, Peter Alice would be like, oh, that was a shit one. Like, yes, it was, because the power bar's so fast. Thanks, Mr. Mate. Alice.
So that's my first video game memories that I can recall. What about you, good self?
My first video game memory is one, I've said this story a few times to friends over the years. It was my uncle had like an old Amstrad CPC, and it was a racing game he was playing. It was called, I know now it's called Formula One Simulator. Not so much of a simulator, because when you look at, I've got it now on cassette, and on the cover, it's just a massive crash. And you're like, that's not really what Formula One's about.
No. Bumper cars,
But I was sitting there, I remember like sitting between his legs, and he was holding like the pad in front of me as if I was playing. So I kind of felt like I was playing it, because I was about 3 or 4. And it was just, watching this game. And I associate it with a smell. And as an adult, I know what that smell was. And it was body odor, because he fucking stank. So, it's a Formula One simulator with my smelly uncle. He's not with he's not in the family anymore, so I can say
R.I.P.
that.
R.I.P. Oh, is he R.I.P. or is he just not in the family?
No, they just divorced years later. Probably probably because he stank. Like
stank,
Poor
fella. Is that Formula One simulator? Is that Codemasters? Is that one of those?
I think it might be Mastertronic. Oh, no, it's a similar thing. It's Mastertronic, I think.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah, because they had a whole host of Codemaster ones that were BMX Simulator, wasn't it? And a few others, I think.
That's one of my other, because that was on the Amstrad as well, so that ties in with my other sort of early memories. But I did have a few sort of honourable mentions, because not so much early video game memories, but key memories that I associate, and one of them ties into football again somehow. One is my brother, who was very young at the time, playing Final Fantasy VII. He must have been like 9 or 10 or something.
Yeah,
we had our PS1 was kind of on the way out, and he finished it. He got like the final boss, or one of the last boss, one of the many bosses in that game.
Yeah,
as he was watching the final cutscene, it just crashed.
Oh no.
And he just shouted the F word really loudly. It was the first like my parents had ever heard him swear. It was a long like and they came up and shouted him. And I just thought, of all the games for that to crash in, the final sequence of Final Fantasy VII.
Oh my god. I fell off Final Fantasy VII when I was playing that on my PlayStation. It was the one time I sort of diverged from the football games, and so many people were talking about it. And I bought it. And I loved it at first. And then I just got kind of like
it's stuck. The grind. It just wears you down. Like the grinding games.
I don't know. I didn't know what to do next. I'd never played one before, but I can't remember how far I got. I'd love to know. I'd have to have a look at a walkthrough, like a playthrough or something, and see where I got to actually see whether I was hours in or minutes in. Do you know what I mean?
Did you get minutes? Just have to get off the train at the start.
Yeah, what am I doing?
What? Press X? What? Were you in an airship? Because I think that kind of signifies the latter half of the game.
I was, to be fair. I don't remember doing much grinding. Again, it was a new concept to me, because it would have been like a JRPG over here, and I probably would never have played one prior to that. But I love the idea of it, you know, looking at the back of the box as well. I was like, that looks beautiful. You know, I really need to play this, and all the reviews and everything were really cool. I love it.
I did the same thing. I think I just got to a boss that I just couldn't beat. And it was obviously like the characters I had and the way they were set up. It was something like I couldn't do enough damage before it killed me. And I was like, I either needed to like really, really know and understand what I was doing, which I didn't, or I'd have to grind for another 10 hours. And I just didn't, it broke me is how I describe it. Like, I can't play this game anymore. I'm done with it.
And I wouldn't have known that concept of grinding either. I would have thought, well, why can't I beat it? Why can't I beat the boss?
Yeah. What am I doing wrong? You don't think, I'll just go off and piss around for 10 hours and then come back.
Yeah, the idea of kind of like leveling up your stats, again, was like alien to me at the time. So I would have just thought, oh, well, this is bloody hard, you know. just leave it at that.
I would have gone from like Shining Force, which I loved, which is, again, it's much more, there's no grinding in it. Right. So I understood the whole leveling up, but I didn't think, if I level up more, it'll stay at the same health. It's quite, for a kid, it's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, big time, yeah. And again, probably pre-internet, maybe, I don't know.
97, yeah, well, I don't think we got into it till like, 2000s.
Yeah, I reckon, like, as in one you could use without it running off a massive phone bill as well. That was the other thing. I think we had it, and then it was kind of like, right, you got your hour, so, and there was obviously no video walkthroughs or, you know, probably not much FAQ stuff either.
You're too busy. You've got your hours instantly. www.douglas.co.uk/web/promote/celebs.
Yes. Why are we going?
No games inside.
Yeah. I was a Fumzilla man. So that's my tipple. Yeah. Probably, they probably all point to the same place nowadays anyway, don't they? They've probably bought all of those domains and pointed them straight at Pornhub. So, yeah.
That's true. Yeah. The halcyon days of old-fashioned porn.
Yeah, exactly. Where you could really have like a widespread...
I was just used to go to magazineinthebush.co.uk.
Yeah. Down the side of the trainlines.com. Yeah. We had a set of train lines at the back of our house when I was growing up. I could get over the back of the garden because it had like quite a low fence, and then there was a massive ditch. Obviously, they had that for safety, I think, so as people didn't just wander onto the train tracks. But yeah, as a kid, that was an adventure to get up there. And then you could walk along the train lines, and two or three mags as you're just strolling along there, like without a foul. Different ones as well. It's just crazy.
It's weird, isn't it? Because I remember actually finding them like in bushes and just like in fields, and you're like, who would like finish it and think, well, I'll just leave this here.
That's like it, yeah. Like it's a library. Odd.
This is a library of like sad, discarded, damp magazines. But why would they be down the track? Yeah, I just don't understand.
Don't
you don't see people like throw like reading the, you know, FHM and just out of a train window.
Yeah.
Why would it happen with dirty magazines?
Yeah.
Got an explanation. But and the other honourable mention I've got was, and you might know what this is actually.
Yeah.
It's a really fun memory I've got of my. I don't know if you've had this where you play a game and you think you see something so new that you think you've broken it. If you know what I mean.
We were on a
cottage holiday or something. Again, I was really young because I remember like looking up at the joysticks on the arcade and we stopped services, and my mum went for a pee or something, and my dad just like. Found this football game, and he was playing it, and I was just watching. And he fouled and then missed a goal kick. This would have been like in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And hit a cameraman next to the goal. And the camera fell over, and I found it really funny. Yeah. And then the ref, who was like this pudgy red faced bloke, was like chasing him around, and he was just running away from him. And
I thought,
we both kind of realized. This isn't gonna. The game isn't gonna start unless you stop. And the ref is just.
He needs to book you.
And I just remember really laughing, thinking, "That's not usually how these games work. They don't have like comedy inserts."
Yeah, and I think that's Football Champ. That sounds like Football Champ.
I just remember it being like a really special moment. We were like, "Oh, that was really cool." You know, that's you don't normally see that.
That was one of my favorite ones to find in the arcade, and it still is. But I've got it on like a little Raspberry Pi underneath my desk. Actually, that's one I always go to because it's nice to. Bash out a few games of that, but yeah, it's got really cool commentary as well, sort of like the commentator's like, fine play, and as you jump over a tackle or whatever, and when you score, it's like really over the top. And again, that was really new for the time. You wouldn't get games like that. They were slightly sterile if you scored. It was more of a and then back to the halfway line, and that's it, you know, no celebrations as such, you know.
It just felt like, it kind of felt a bit like Turf Masters.
Yeah.
You know, it was green and just a bit more fun and bubbly. Yeah.
Presentation wise, it was a proper step up. I think it's a Konami game, I think.
That's probably why it's so tasty then. Yeah. I'll have to look at that. I might just watch him like a Let's Play of it or something.
Yeah, no, he's cool. It's just, easy to pick up and play. And another game that I really wanted to play on a home console. And I don't think, I came to SNES, I think, but it wasn't very good when it reached the SNES. It was a bit watered down, you know, which was the case. So all good.
So then the first video game and computer console that you played is the next one we've got here.
So I went, I used to obviously go around to people's houses after school and whatnot, and there my mate had a ZX Spectrum Plus 3. And again, it was this, he had a box of discs. And this is what I really loved. I don't know what it was about a box of discs. It just really felt like futuristic. And I just fell like head over heels for this Spectrum. It was a Plus 3, mind. So I always wanted a Plus 2 when I was growing up. But he had a Plus 3 and obviously instant load. I don't know if they were instant load. Were they? He had a little loading
time. I've never heard of a Plus. Spectrum is a real blind. I own one, but I've never actually. Because I don't even know how to boot them up.
Yeah,
like the game. I've never played one at all.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. I haven't played a Speccy in years, but I don't know if you have to type in a command. Probably more than likely. But yeah, it was Bomb Jack. It was Bomb Jack on the Spectrum Plus 3 that he had, and yeah, I just looked at that and thought, wow, this is so cool. Like, it's got all these, he had a little desk. It was in the hallway. It's probably for his dad. I reckon it was probably his dad's computer. It was almost like a little home office setup, but he could play games on it as well. And it was just great. It's a good looking one. It's kind of like, very square with a little disc on the end, like the disc player on the end, and it's just, yeah, it looked really good, really good. Fell for it immediately.
I was just stuck then on you talking about, like, there's something about a box of discs, and I think what I like about it when I see a box of discs or cassettes is the mystery of, like, what's on them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, with, if you go into someone's house and they've got, like, say, loads of PlayStation games, you can instantly just see what it is. Yeah. But a load of, like, dodgy pirate blank, you're like, oh, what's there? Yeah. As you got Strip Poker 3 with the data discs, or like, you're going through and, like, there might be, you know, I love it when there's, like, on the front there's one disc or one cassette and, like, three or four games, and you're like, oh, yeah. This is cool. It's like a treasure trove sort of feel.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, actually. Yeah, spot on. It reminds me of my mate Paul, the one who, with the brother who had a console as well, and they had everything. They went and bought an Amiga with a job lot of sort of like 200 discs in. I think there was two disc boxes, and we just made it our mission to work through each one of these discs. And it was like, right, what's this one like? It's the stuff we'd never heard of, but I've come to know great games like It Came from the Desert. I was playing on that, and it was one of them ones where you do stop and you just play it. You don't move on to the next
move
one.
Move on, yeah. Just yeah, like, oh, that works, let's move on. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some of them were like, yeah, that's pretty shit. It works, but it's rubbish. Yeah, let's move on. But yeah, something like that. It was like, wow, it's like playing a movie, you know. So yeah. Yeah, like you say, treasure trove. You never know what you're going to get next. So
I remember getting with that, having the Amiga and having playing Monkey Island, and then coming across Loom afterwards, and, like, again, Car Boot Sale Picker, and getting, like, weirdly emotionally involved in it. Like, just because it was like, oh, what, Loom? What's that? I don't even know what a Loom is. And I put it on. It's this beautiful, wordless tale. It's like, oh, this is really nice.
Yeah, I've never played that. Never played Loom, but I know, obviously,
it's worth a glass of wine and a let's play.
Yeah,
because it's all based around musical notes and stuff. It's really cool.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I remember. Just thinking of games that so on the Amiga I played, Fate of Atlantis, Indiana Jones.
Oh, yeah.
And again, pre-internet, got to a point where I was, I crushed a stone circle or a stone tablet, right? And I thought, that's it, I've broken it. There's nothing I can do now, I've lost that item. And at the point, you didn't have any kind of like, walkthroughs, like we said before, and I never played it again until about 5 years ago, when I thought I must complete Fate of Atlantis because I got stuck on that part. And I just realized, when I obviously looked at the walkthrough, I did a little walkthrough bit of it, and I was like, oh, that's just part of the puzzle, you've now got to figure it out. It was the concept of knowing what the game wanted you to do, whereas I'd never really played a point and click properly, you know, from I owned my own big box copy of, you know, and played it from start to finish. And I just like gave up on it. But it's the beauty of going back to things sometimes and just having a little walk, actually getting the walk through, you know, like you said, getting a glass of wine, just sitting down and playing it, you know, and then ticking it off those games you maybe have like just passed over, sort of thing. Yeah.
And I think as well, like some of the ones I played as a kid, you just did, like you see, you didn't understand them. So as an adult, you'd go back and think, oh yeah, obviously that's what happens. You know, now you've got 40 years of gaming under your belt.
This is it. Yeah.
So it is nice to kind of, and you still get sucked in, especially the adventure games, because they're ones that I think sometimes I can just watch a let's play and just kind of get lost in it a little bit. Because
it's true. Yeah, I did it. I completed Full Throttle not so long ago as well, and did a similar thing. I tried to play it as much as I could all the way through, and then I needed. Sometimes you just need the walkthrough to like give you a nudge.
It's not fun to just be stuck, and then you get to the point where you're either clicking on every pixel or putting everything together in your inventory. When I get to that point where I think, oh, that's where my next step is, out comes a walkthrough.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, yeah. You're not going to get.
It's just a
It's just a difference in the way they made the games then, because they wanted them to last as long as they possibly could, I suppose, wasn't it? It's kind of like, right, you've got this limited bit of money to spend on this game. We need to make it last as long as it possibly can, you know, sort of thing, give people value for their money or whatever. But frustrating game experience is not good. So, yeah. I'm glad for the walkthroughs.
Speaking, I'm just really quickly going to pop myself on pause, and I'm going to just top up my wine glass, if that's cool, before we move on to the next question.
Okay, mate, yeah.
I'll be good, super yeah. quick. I shall mute myself for a second.
Okie dokie. Yeah.
So I'm back.
Here he is.
I've upgraded now from wine to inches cider because the wine is
nice. I love that inches cider. So yeah, it's a real good one.
Really happily.
Yeah, I went to my sister's, and I only have it really when I go there. And was it at Christmas? Oh, it's just such a treat when you haven't had it for ages. It's just very good one. I think they sell it in Tesco's. I mean, I could just get it out of Tesco's or whatever, but it feels only right to drink it when I go to my sister's for some reason. Yeah.
Usually I'm a wine man, but we had some here for friends who came around. And there was one left, so it's like a cider's like a summer thing for me, really.
Yeah, yeah, it gets you in the mood, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. So good bit of cider. Yum yum.
So question three.
Oh, question three. Question two for you.
Oh yeah. Well, I was going to say my next. They're quite boring for me because the first video game computer console I owned and played was the Amstrad CPC. Again, there's like these questions for me are all because my uncle had one. I was bequeathed it, and then it was Formula One Simulator. Curse of Sherwood was an early classic, but obviously. Yeah. You play Fry Attack instead of Robin Hood. Every kid's dream. like Werewolves of London, all the Amstrad stuff. And it's weird because Amstrad never gets talked about the same way as Commodore or Spectrum. No. It's kind of in the middle. But for me, it goes like you've got the Spectrum because the awful audio palette, that piercing beep. And then you've got like the Amstrad and then the Commodore 64. People complain about the muted colors. But it's got the best music, so it's like, what do you like, really?
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, I used to love the Amstrad coloured keys, green? Is it green? I think it's
green and red.
Yeah, green and red, yeah. And because it had the cassette deck built in as well, it just looks so cool.
It was really cool, yeah.
Yeah, my mate had one, and this was my introduction to Football Manager games, as he had Football Manager 2 on the Amstrad and just used to want to go around his house after school every day and play that. Like, it's just, I think it was one of the better versions as well of Football Manager. And it was just, it was a dream to play.
Going back to my games room, I will kind of play football games and stuff, but I don't really play, management games would be completely beyond me.
Yeah.
And I remember, it was only a few years ago, I think it was when we were taking all the games room down to put in storage.
Yeah.
And there was I've got a copy of Premier Manager on the Mega Drive.
Ooh,
right?
Yeah.
And I thought, controlling a keyboard-based management game with a Mega Drive controller, surely... there must be a lot of typing in those games, I'm guessing.
Do you know what? I don't think there is, because just thinking about it. So if I've played Premier Manager, and from memory, the only typing would be if you're searching for a player name. So like if you're doing transfer stuff, you would be like, I wonder if I can buy, I don't know, Michael Owen or something. All right, see Michael Owen, how much is he worth? Oh balls, I can't afford him, kind of thing. But beyond that,
Michael Owen's a bit modern, isn't he, mate? Ian Rush, Steve Stewart.
That's better, yeah. Yeah, we're talking, Yeah, he would have been about 10 years old or something. You know,
he's probably 50 now.
He's probably, yeah, he's affordable in those games because he's only 10. But I think, yeah, typing wise, you probably would get away with it. I reckon they probably, yeah, could just map a mouse movement onto the D-pad and then maybe have a pop-up. Although, to be fair, I mean, that would be a pain in the ass, wouldn't it? Trying to type in a player's name using the D. Oh, no, yeah. I think, Amiga was the best for the
you need a keyboard for certain things. Forget people who can finish Dark Souls with a Donkey Kongers. Just watch someone try to play Primary Manager with a fucking controller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I bet it did all right, though. I bet it was a good seller because people were crying out for those games to come over to the market, console. Yeah.
And that was when football was massive, wasn't it?
Yeah, plenty of people wanted those games to come over, but they always stayed on the PC and the Amiga. So, yeah, I'm not surprised it made its way. So what was that question?
That was two.
Two, right, okay. So question three, first computer or console that you owned. So this was, I've put here Christmas 1989 or 1990. Seems about right. Again, I mean, there's no way I can verify this, but it seems about right. And I wanted Spectrum Plus 2 because it had the most football games on it.
No Master System, no Mega Drive. No, I want Spectrum Plus 2.
Specky, yeah, because it just had everything. Football Director, it had Football Manager 1 and 2. It had the lot, and I just wanted to play all these bloody managerial games. So I said to my dad, please get me a Plus 2. And I think the one that was around the time would have been the one we were talking about earlier with the Zapper, the James Bond. Yeah. Is it Living Daylights? Is that the one?
I'm not sure. I'll go with you on that.
Yeah, I reckon it was. And that's the one I wanted. That's the pack I wanted. I didn't care actually which one I got, but that's the one I could like really picture.
You visualised
it. Yeah. Yeah, this is it. Yeah, and I played it over in my head that I was getting it, and Dad was clued up enough to go out and buy it, and then opened my present on Christmas Day, and it was an Atari XE GS, which is XE game system. And I remember feeling like, for that moment, I like really dejected, like proper, like punch in the stomach style dejected.
Yeah. Oh, they spelled Spectrum Plus 2 wrong on the box, Dad. I don't know. I'm gonna have to have a look at this now. So an Atari XE.
It's a lovely looking thing, though. If you see it. It's
lower.
Once I'd got over that gut pump, it's got like these really nice pastel buttons on the console part. Because basically, it's a console with that's it. Yeah. And it's got the keyboard attached to the front, so that detaches from that console bit. And you could either put your cartridges in that sort of pastely buttony part, or you could get the data cassette. Connects directly to the back of that console thing, and you can load up tapes. And it was actually really cool. I mean, it was a really cool machine because it's basically an Atari XE XL. I think it's Atari 800, Atari 400, all built into one machine. So I think Atari was struggling at the time, and it was almost like one more punt of trying
there
to
were
get
not
the...
there were not many games for this console, Rich. This you because this you could if you still got it, you get it, £300 for it, mate. If you check that on eBay now, but
do you know what? I sold it to some guy who come around, and he would have been in his 40s, I reckon, at the time, and I was probably about 15 or something, and he took the lot, and he was probably very happy with it, and he's probably still got it now, and it was boxed as well. I remember it. I'd love to still have it.
I'm looking at there are 32. It's only 32 games. This is kind of Virtual Boy levels, right? And to make matters worse, there's not a single football game in this list I'm looking at.
Well, this is it. This is the thing. But that's 32 games on cartridge.
Oh, okay.
So what you could do is you get your data cassette set up, so like your cassette tape deck, whatever, and you can then load anything from the 800... or the Atari 800 or 400 XE XL range. So you had the option to get whatever you wanted. So there are, in fact, like probably thousands of games, but again, at the time, the reason my dad got it is what I've worked out is it would have been on fire sale, basically, because they couldn't sell these bloody things because no one wanted them. Because when you think about that time of the years, it would have been like Sega Genesis, Mega Drive, Sega Master System. That's what everyone was buying over here, you know, in the UK around about that time, you know, and they just couldn't sell these bloody XCGSs.
And if you're going to, it's almost like the, what's it called, the Amstrad GX 4000.
Yeah.
Just fell between the cracks where it's like, no one wants those.
Exactly, yeah. So I reckon, yeah, Dad must have picked it up on a good deal. And it came with Flight Simulator 2, which I don't know if you've ever played before, but Jesus Christ, is that hard. just for the plane to take off, you know. It's you had like the manual, you know, the manual was that thick and it was literally right. prime the engines, you know. Now
a keyboard overlay. I could just imagine your dad going into an electronics boutique and like bring bring, and then oh hello, have you got any shit that no one wants? So I can did it have a keyboard overlay for the Atari?
Do you know what? I don't think it did.
I remember looking at those. It's a running joke with me and my friend where it's like You look at it and it's like, okay, so you press F4 and you the Bombay doors, but if you press Shift and F4, then you look out of the rear, right? Okay, and there's just so much to take in.
It's just so much, yeah. It was impossible.
Casual gamer.
Me and Dad managed to take off, I think, a few times, but never managed to land. You know, there's never a landing possible. And it came with another cartridge, Bug Hunt, which was like your most like basic Zapper game where you had
I think there was something like that on the Menacer. I remember playing something like that with like flies and you just
It's just like I think it was like what would have been about 9 squares on the screen, and then it's like basically like a whack-a-mole, really. It pops up,
right,
and then you got to shoot it, right? Okay, another bug in that square, shoot it, you know. And it was
months of fun.
Months of fun. I'm trying to think what I would have bought beyond that, but yeah, it's those were the two games I had. Me and my dad used to do coding, which was nice. So you can code, you can create your own games. You know, you must have been sold it on that premise that don't worry, there's no games for it, but you can code your own games, you know. So then me and him obviously sitting there like typing like this, like and then missing a comma and it being a syntax error, but by the time we'd completed it.
I remember having that on my Amstrad, and it was like a card game. I think it was like 3-card Monty. But of course, it's like 8 solid pages of symbols you're typing in. And then you've got one like pound sign wrong, and that crashed.
That's it. Yeah, it's game over. You've got to go back and debug your code. Jesus. Yeah. Good times, though. Good times.
Yeah. So question 4. The video game store that you visited as a kid. I like this question.
Yeah, this is this brings back a lot of memories, and I thought about it earlier on. Actually, it brings back a lot of kind of like thoughts around smells of what these shops would smell like at the time, especially Logic.
Smelly bastards, by any chance?
Well, there was a bit of that, but it was more the. Do you know that? yeah, it's like being at a video game conference, isn't it? Where you walk in there and there's this wall of sweat just hits you.
But before you go on, right, I've got to say this one. Bear that in mind, right? This question. But I went to the one in Bristol Video Games Market about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've got a very poor gag reflex, right? A lot of things will make me stretch. And I was there, and I remember I was leaning over the Mega Drive games, and I was looking at Second Samurai and the Mega Drive, and I thought, oh, 40 quid, that's not too bad. Yeah. And I could smell something, and I thought, oh, that smells like fresh human shit.
Oh.
And then I turned around, and it was the guy next to me's breath.
He sort of went, and I went...
And I had to run outside. Do you know when you try to stop yourself from being sick and you're so on the edge, you feel a bit dizzy? I was outside, my eyes were streaming, and Faye rushed out like, what's wrong? And I said, I'm talking. that guy's breath. And I said, I don't know what died in his mouth, but my God. So yeah, that was my, when you see you open and the sense hit you, it's like people's breath. I'm like,
yeah, the smaller the venue as well, the worse. In fact, it should just
be open air, really. Open air, just with fans pushing. Yeah. Sorry, go on. You were saying when you were a kid, you were a video game.
Yeah, yeah. So it's So the first one that springs to mind is Logic. So there's Logic Computers. It was in Cheshunt, which is kind of out of London, Greater London, I don't know, suburbs, you know, sort of.
Chesant, did you
Yeah, Cheshunt. So
say?
it goes like Enfield. Enfield you might have heard of because Enfield's fairly famous, sort of. I don't know. It goes, yeah, maybe Tottenham, Enfield, then Cheshunt. That's probably the best way to think of it. Anyway, it's sort of, yeah, out that way. And it was just like this amazing sort of setup on every wall or every sort of area had a different system. You know, if you go into a game maybe now, it's like very much PS5, Xbox, and that's it, you know, and you've got a few little smaller bits, but this had
Switchy
everything.
bits,
Of course, yeah, you'd have your switches, yeah. But this just literally seemed to have everything from sort of like the earliest sort of Atari stuff all the way up, and this was been in the 90s when I was going up until sort of like the and you had all the Sega Mega Drive stuff and your Sega Master System. So every single part of it was taken up with cartridges and tapes, and it was just so good to go in there because you could just literally just sift through. At the time, I'd be looking for my Atari XeGS. And it would be like one little like row at the top of there was I think it had an Atari section, and then it was divided, and it was
just imagine you
yeah.
say, excuse me, sir, have you got any Atari XeGS games? And he said, in the bin at the back, mate, up
Yeah,
this.
mate. Yeah. Don't bother me again. Yeah. So it was kind of like, but yeah, going there it was great because I just used to fawn over everything else as well. It's kind of like, right, at some point I'll get to looking at the Atari XE stuff, but I'm gonna go and have a look at the Master System, see what's on there. Now they always had like a demo going, and you could like pick up and play it and have a little go on it. And they had a screen for each system, and it's really well thought out. You
Oh, that's
know,
cool.
I mean, you don't see it now, do you? You just go into a place now, and you wouldn't really have the setups like the console hooked up now. You'd just always just see a big row of games, and that's it, wouldn't you? Really.
It's just so homogenized now. It's so, like, even, I mean, when we go away, the only time you see anything out of the ordinary is like when we go to like we do a lot of like city trips, not a lot, but a few times people go on city trips to like Cologne or Paris or whatever. And I really find it interesting searching out the local culture of like their video gaming, and you find and it's like a real treasure trove. Obviously, a lot of stuff is expensive, but just seeing what systems they have there, because I remember you talking about Logic. There was, for me, it was a place called Digital Window in Pontypridd. And it was just kind of quite PC heavy, but they sold like public domain Amiga discs. They let you rent games for the weekend, which is how I played Two Crude Dudes on the Mega Drive for the first time.
Oh, cool.
And because I was in this sort of lucky situation that, like I said, I've got a big family, so I was like, Brit's a fucking nerd. He can have my old Commodore, whatever. I could, when you went into somewhere like Electronics Boutique, because I had like five or six systems, but very little money, something would be on sale, like in the bargain bin, because it is like, the Amiga was on its way out, but the Mega Drive was brand new. But I also had a Commodore, so if there was like something that was like down for like a 50p or a quid, I could like, oh, I can buy three games today.
Oh, mate,
I
yeah,
could
that's
just start. That
quality.
was cool. But yes, yeah, so Electronics Boutique in Cardiff was one I remember really well, and a Digital Window was good. And there was another one called Power Games, and it ties into our shared love of pornography,
Oh,
where
happy days.
it would go in, and it would all be like video games, and then it was run by like this really cool Asian guy, and then you go on the corner and they just sold like adult magazines and stuff. And what, of course, being like a teenage boy, you'd be like looking at the Atari XeGS games, but then every now and again. So yeah,
Quality, love it.
I like the
Oh,
fact I've never heard of Atari XeGS before today. It's gonna be my go-to console then.
mate, yeah, if you can get one, yeah, that's you are made, mate. You're absolutely made. It just looks nice. You just put it on the side, and
So like 80s as well, like the soft pastel colors and stuff.
I know. What were they thinking? Like, what, who's that appealing to? I'm not really sure like what they're aiming it at, but
You can imagine that over the and it like sort of gliding across the entrance screen to Kilroy or something. It's like, oh, it's an
Tower of TGS.
Yeah, bit of a Kilroy reference there. Like it. The other one I was going to mention was Ross's as well. Ross's in Chingford. So that was a little bit different because it was a toy shop. And it was a really weird toy shop because it was a very long, narrow sort of shop. But then at the front, it was an ice cream parlor. Okay. Just to the as you come in, and it would sell as a little kiosk out to the road, and then you could go in and actually order them as well, I think. And then you went in a bit further, and then it was normal toys. And then you went in a bit further, and then it just had it must have been about four or five racks just of cassettes, purely cassettes. And for some reason, they did have a lot of XE games in there. I'm not sure why. It was almost like it was an afterthought, you know, oh, we'll sell some video games. Oh, these are cheap, you know, we'll stick them up.
We'll sell there. Those.
That's where I used to get most of my cassettes from, was from this little Ross's in Chingford. I mean, I don't think it's there anymore. But just randomly found that they had a good supply. So, yeah.
Were they quite cheap as well, or were they?
Yeah, you $2.99 jobbies and, nice. Pocket money prices back then, wasn't it? So
that was the genius of, because my mum used to work in Woolworths a long time ago. And
yeah.
And also, if WH Smith was across the road. So you could get, she'd come home and if, my pocket money is boom, here's Fantastic Dizzy on the Commodore. And it's like, wicked, I got a brand new game for a quid.
You know? Brilliant. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Mine was my favourite one that I picked up there from Ross's was Ninja Commando. I used to like that. That's a good one. I think that's been on most systems, if I'm honest. But yeah, it felt like it was a good game for my XE, and I was just happy with it. Just you happy to have a good game. Yeah.
Is that the one that's, or was it Ninja Massacre that's like Gauntlet?
No, it's got this one's more like a kind of jumping platformer type.
Oh, thing, okay. Yeah.
Ninja Massacre. You fling Death Stars, I think, from memory, and you've got to dodge things, and very basic, but felt great at the time.
I'm learning a lot about this. Ninja Commando, the Atari XCGS, I've got a lot of documentaries.
Yeah, this is it. It's what it's all about. It's the forgotten console, or computer. Was it a computer or was it a console?
I guess a computer if I had a keyboard. I don't know what kind of...
Yeah. Yeah.
What the definition of each is when it gets to that sort of level.
Yeah, I suppose, at the end of the day, if we're saying a cartridge can be plugged into the back of a Commodore 64 and that we consider that a computer, don't we? So, we'll go with that. Yeah.
So what's the most influential game that you have ever played? E.g., which game has shaped you as a gamer the most?
I came back with Football Manager 2 for this one. And basically because it bore that obsession of trying to find... A specky, so as I could play it. I thought at the time, that's the one for me. And B, for the fact that beyond that, I probably then concentrated far too much on playing bloody football games beyond that point in time. It's kind of like I said, it's sort of meant that I was always playing football games rather than all the other great stuff that was out there. I wasn't a Dizzy kid. I wasn't playing all the Dizzies or anything like that. I wasn't doing all the platformers. I was literally just fiending for these bloody Football Manager games, which is madness, absolute madness. Yeah.
Well, if you enjoyed them,
I absolutely loved them. I still do, to be fair, but I've realised now there are time sinks. So there is, very much a social element, sort of the hot seat manager stuff. We used to have plenty of great nights playing Football Manager. Right, okay, you got 10 minutes, you got to do your transfers, pick your team, and then when your 10 minutes is up, then it's my turn. I get to do my team, so we used to play it a lot of the time. And this is before, obviously, network games, which have probably taken over now. Again, I don't play it anymore because I'm scared to get stuck into it again and lose days of my life playing it. But I think most people probably play over the network now, but... back then.
It's a shame there's not one you can get on your phone. I guess there must be, you can just kind of, something you can dip in and out of, as you kind of casually, that would probably be the best way for one of those games, I think.
Yeah, they'd almost need one that's kind of not too complex. Because that's the problem with it. As it got further into the series, obviously the Kevin Toms ones were fairly basic. And then that went away for years on end. And I think they brought it back, Football Manager in name, back in sort of 2005, I want to say, And that was the rebirth of it. And then by that point in time, it becomes so complicated that just to do something simple just took too long. Whereas if you have like something that's quite simple, quite straightforward, dip in, fairly driven sort of like screens that you don't need to fiddle around with, you know, just pick your team, then that would probably work pretty well. There's probably a few out there. Again, it's probably something someone's thought of, you know, to jump on the back of it. They do like mobile version, obviously, of Football Manager itself. But I've played that before, and it's, again, very, very in-depth still compared to what they used to be, you know.
As I'm loving how football-heavy this initial podcast is. But I've always wondered the two things, right? What's the difference between... Well, the first question is probably quicker. Did it bother you in management games when you couldn't see the match being played out?
It was always a dream to see the match.
Like each then, match, sort of, yeah.
Yeah, it was always like, wow, this would be great if you had full match, you know, engine, you know. And at the time, you had, say, Football Manager 2 that just give you highlights. And you'd think, oh, I wish we could see the whole thing. But, yeah, the more I've played and the better they've got, actually, I think it's better when there's just little dots on the screen just playing out, because you can watch the shape of your team almost from an aerial.
Okay. Not just focus on one person.
Yeah, whereas if you're just watching those highlights with sort of animated graphics, it almost takes away from the sort of, you're not playing the game anyway, so you're just watching your players play. So you want to see what they're doing. But the best way to do that is actually aerial view.
Bird's eye view.
Yeah, watch. And then almost a lot of it's up there in your head as well, because you play out in your head, oh, and Beckham has hit one from 20 yards. Yeah, and you'd like give yourself a little bit of commentary and have a little celebration, you know. Whereas, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that'd be really cool.
Yeah, it was good times, but yeah.
And the other question is, what is the difference between Premier Manager and Championship Manager?
So Premier Manager was Domark. Championship Manager was Domark. Premier Manager was Gremlin, I think. Gremlin, yeah, it would have been Gremlin. And those two games, kind of like the Premier Manager one was more... it was less in depth, I think. It was seen as less of a spreadsheet and more like of a good presentation kind of football game that was maybe slightly dumbed down, I think, as well, from memory. You know, just for maybe a wider audience, less nerdy audience. Because essentially, like, Championship Manager is just a spreadsheet, you know. It was just literally a spreadsheet, but with a graphical overlay. And it's all lists, you know, very much lists.
Oh, so it's full on then.
Yeah, so like your Championship Manager, you'd have you pick your team, and then you'd go into that transfer market, look at these lists of players, like looking at your different skills and whatnot, and you're trying to sort of work out who'd be the best buy, and it's very numbers heavy and word heavy. Whereas with Premier Manager, they try to make it a bit more jazzy. You know, I think when you score a goal, there's like a scoreboard. Flash it up with goal and all the rest of it, and they just try to, I think, just yeah, a bit more of a appeal to a wider audience, I reckon. But they were both pretty good in their own right, to be fair. But yeah, so that's probably the main difference, I think. And then obviously your Championship Manager went more heavy on PC, like as the time went on, when it moved away from Amiga and went on to PC. So again, it was quite hungry as well. You had to have a decent PC to run it. I mean,
really,
the database was so big. Literally so much data in the database that you had to tell the game at the start whether you wanted the full database, the middle size or the smallest size your PC could actually run it, and how many leagues do you want to run as well, because some PCs couldn't bloody handle it. And yeah, I used to have to cut mine right down to the lowest. I had a Poxy Packard Bell. She's, you know, one of those beige
Packard Bell. Yeah.
Those beige ones out of Curry's or it was in PC world, maybe. I can't remember that, but yeah, one of those beauties that you think you're buying a great PC and you realize actually this is a lump of turd, you know. Yeah, it used to be the dream to have one that's good enough to run it on full database.
I don't think I've ever had a good PC. I don't think, because
this
cost
is my first. The one I've got now is my first. Yeah,
I just never. I used to buy it instantly, be behind the times, and just not willing to, or able to upgrade it. I just think I can't be bothered. That's why I always end up buying a console. I think actually when I first started writing for Games Freezer, I got a PC because you were sending me Steam games.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then of course I sort of moved on to console, and I thought, yeah, I'm not gonna update my PC. I'm not getting down that route.
I think with this one, I was a little bit ahead. So I've got this like 2080 RTX card in here at the minute, and this was about 5 years ago, and I haven't needed to update it since. So that was, yeah, like I say, 5 years ago, I reckon, easily. And it seems as though the only reason to update it going forward is if things really take off in, like, the, you know, the what they call it, the RTX graphics, you know, with the lighting and the shadows and all that. But what difference does that really make? This can pretty much run everything at the minute, and it's 5 years old. So there is there's diminishing returns. The longer we go on, the reasons for updating are getting less and less, I think. There will be a time when I'll need to, obviously, but yeah, it's lasted me so far. So yeah. Although it's the first time I've ever been really in the PC market for gaming, you know, always been a console gamer really over the years. Yeah,
just easier plug and play.
Yeah. Well, I just picked up that PS5. I can't remember if I texted you, did I? I can't remember now.
Oh, no, I didn't know you got a PS5.
I remember I was just after Christmas, and I was like, oh, I really wanted the PS5 forever, you know, and they're coming down in price. And then I was looking at eBay, and you can get like a decent deal, and I thought, sod it, I'm going to go for it. And I managed to pick like a disc edition up for like £372, and it's absolutely pristine. These people was obviously never used it, I don't think. They said they bought it for 600 odd, and when I opened it up, it's still fully boxed. Opened it out, all the plastic wrapping around the cables, the plug still had the little plastic bit that goes over the pins.
Yeah, they would not keep that. If they must have just bought it, just put it in a shed or something.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, I think everyone was trying to buy them at one point, weren't they? It was a kind of like a, it was almost during COVID, I think, when it was a,
yeah,
it was a thing you needed to get. Oh, you got to get one of these, And it was so scarce, weren't they, at the time as well. But yeah, I'm glad I got it. I mean, I haven't got any games with it yet. I'm just playing the Astro's Playroom at the minute, but
That's good enough though, isn't it? I remember that's PS4. Brilliant.
Yeah, very good, very good.
So that opens up another branch of reviewing for you then.
Yeah, this is it. That's what I thought. Yeah, onto the PS5. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Greedfall 2 is coming out this year, so that's you sorted.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to play, which I haven't played yet, Ghost of Tsushima. My friend said that looks real. I mean, he said it was really good, and it does look beautiful. And yeah, I think that'd be right up my street. So I'm gonna probably get around to that. But again, it's having the bloody time to play these things, isn't it?
I saw, it was always that moment when you get into an RPG, you think, I know where this is gonna lead. It's gonna lead to like me being really tired at 1 a.m. Like, I've got to stop. I've got to get up for work and take the kids. But
yeah, this is it. Yeah. Decisions. Right. So back to what was we talking about? Oh yeah, so we were saying most influential game, so Football Manager 2, that's the short answer. Or maybe Street Fighter 2 on the SNES. And the reason for that, I'll say it briefly because we spent a lot of time on this one for me, was around the time when everyone was in the arcade and they were very good at Street Fighter 2 and I was absolutely useless. And then when it came out on the SNES, it meant I could sit at home and get good. And I was very good on the SNES, but I still wasn't very good at the arcade. But I could beat anyone on the SNES because of the bloody joypad. You get used to finger.
Of course.
Sort of where they are.
The shoulder button.
Yeah, the shoulder. Yeah, shoulder buttons, like heavy kick on the top shoulder buttons. And I was, really good at that. But then, go back to the arcade. I was bloody useless. But it almost that just seeing everyone play Street Fighter 2 in the arcade and be so good and watch my friend who is really good as well. I was like, I want to be as cool as them. Like, I want to put my 20p on the...
And have a go. Be a contender. You want to be a contender.
Yes, is it. I could have been a contender, yeah. So, that really drove me and, like, really sort of, like, took over my life for maybe a good year or so, I reckon.
And really? Like, you were really hips deep into it?
Just wanted to be, like, the best at Street Fighter 2, you know. And and plus it cost my mum about 60 odd quid, so I weren't allowed another game for another year.
It would have been about 60. Do you know, the Street Fighter 2 is, I'm just thinking before carry on, should we stop at like question 10 and just make this a two-parter? Because I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
So, but just to say that, Yeah, with Street Fighter 2, it's a good shout, actually, because I mean, just I can imagine you trying to play Street Fighter 2, like watching it in the arcade and thinking, I need to go home, I need to get good at this, I need to be the best.
Yeah,
and then going home and buying it on the Amiga where you've got six punches and kicks attached to one button. You're like, right, okay. I still don't understand how that works, like where you hold it down for a certain amount of time, but like, what? How'd you do a medium kick? What? I remember playing Street Fighter 2 in the arcade, and even now, I think Street Fighter 2 for me is like the kind of that, there's like a weird purity to Street Fighter 2, like that still stands up. Like we went to an arcade in Bridgewater a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I've got a really nice picture of my mum and Faye playing it, because my mum will play fighting games and she'll button bash and she will win, and then she'll be really condescending. So she does not a gamer at all. So the perfect combo. With Street Fighter 2, when I see people play it now, it's like a pleasure to watch someone be good at the game. Because I've got a friend called, Lee again, who writes for the site. Yeah. He's really good. He always goes, I think it's Kenneth. And always really good with him. And it's like when you watch someone who's really good at Street Fighter, it's I don't know, there's something kind of absorbing about it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. They almost know what they're going to do next before they do it. And it just flows, doesn't it? Yeah.
If you watch someone who says, oh, I'm really good at, I don't know, like Double Dragon or Golden Axe, you know, there's like certain, you know, the sort of exploiting bits. But with Street Fighter, it's just being good.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, that it's quite addictive to see.
Yeah. It's really hard to beat someone who's good as well. It's really, like, you can't. A lot of the time, if someone button bashes against someone who's good, they won't win. If two people are button bashing, then you just never know who's going to win. But,
All right. Well, tied into that, our good friend Pixel Hunted was in Japan, where it's obviously still a big scene on, like, you know, on the sort of competitive scene. And he said, what happens is when you see two people playing Street Fighter over there, like, you know, Street Fighter 6 in the arcade or whatever it is, there's like a feeling out bit where they'll start and they'll just, like, go. And depending on what your first move is,
They kind of know.
So he said, if you're playing Street Fighter against, like in Japan, against an Asian guy who knows Street Fighter, and you do a jumping kick and then duck and do a sweep, he's like, and then off, you know, and just tune you up because he knows, like, that's what the beginners do.
But that's
always my jump in, kick, down, try to catch him out. Yeah, never do.
Block, that's it. Block, sit in the corner, right? Don't jump. Try and catch him as they're coming in. It's like, oh my God. I was very good with guile at the time. Oh, I think that's a later question. I've blown me load there.
So for me, influential games, like mine is pretty quick because my entire gaming love comes down to two things, which is like Monkey Island and Hunter. And I think Monkey Island because it was the first time I played a video game. When I got the end of it, I actually think I must have been about 7 or 8, and I remember actually getting upset because I thought I'll never experience that world again
for
the first time. Like I remember just watching it and thinking I felt like I was part of a movie, if you know what I mean, like part of a story. So I've always loved adventure sort of narrative driven games. But then Hunter, have you ever played Hunter on the Amiga?
I haven't played Hunter. Yeah.
It's like a really.
I don't
really
think I've heard of it, to be fair.
Really?
I mean, I'm not saying I've heard of everything, but yeah.
If you check it on YouTube, Hunter on the Amiga, it's like a proto GTA. So you can kind of, it's like a really, really, really early GTA where you start off and go to different islands and do different bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Different pieces, but it's like obviously like really slow and clunky. But it's the first game I felt you could go into different boats and cars and you could just piss around, basically.
Oh, I see.
It wasn't much to do, but it was like a truly open world kind of Caribbean island, so you could go on a boat and on all these different things. And I thought, oh, I feel like I can do what I want. And it was the game I would just play when I wanted to like make up my own little stories.
Oh, that is cool.
Hunter is a, and it's still playable. It's clunky but playable.
It says here the player controls a soldier in a large three-dimensional world. And can move by walking, swimming, or using various vehicles, ranging from cars to tanks to surfboards. That is pretty cool, especially for the time.
Like a push bike,
1991. Wow.
And one disc as well, that came. One disc.
That is mental.
But it's quite impressive.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out. It's really hard to... I've found it's really hard. I don't know how hard it is to emulate Amiga games. I think you need BIOSes and all that kind of stuff. And it's never just easy just to pick up and do. But you saying you got the Mini, and I was looking at that. Well, I was sort of torn between getting a PS5 or an Amiga Mini, funnily enough. And I was like, well...
Everyone's choice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
torn between a PS5 or picking up another Atari XeGS. If you do, yeah. If you send me a message, because if you pick up an Amiga Mini and you can, and I can pretty much send you a USB stick and you plug it in the back and boom, it's like every Amiga game.
That is the dream.
That's what it's set up over there, because I've just had a pleasure of just going through these games.
That is cool. Yeah. They're fairly reasonable as well. I think they're not too expensive, are they? The Amiga Mini. I think it was about 120, was it, or something like that.
You should be able to pick them for less than that, but I mean, I would have. Well. Hopefully, but it's almost like it's built to be exploited, because
yeah,
you have to jailbreak it or bloody hack it. You just put a USB in
and just slide load. Bang!
It's like it can't wait for that to happen.
Yeah. We've given you these games, but you're going to be playing funny, these other games.
Yeah, how long? You're not going to play Time Bandit for too long. You want to get on Hunter. what game have you spent the most number of hours on?
So. More recently is Elden Ring, without actually getting anywhere near and completing it, which maybe says a lot for how good the game is, but then also says a lot for how crap I am at the game, which is kind of crazy, because the longer you play something, and normally the better you get at it, or you level up so much that you become invincible or just amazing. But I put all them hours in, and just I don't think I opened up the final areas. It was just.
Do you think you'll ever go back to it?
I might do. I was thinking about it recently, funnily enough, because they're going to do some DLC for it. I think it's later on this year, I think. So that might tempt me back in. And it is a wonderful game. It's just wonderful to run around in and just piss around and do stuff and find these little crazy sort of areas. And you just appreciate how much effort they put into creating. We both played Starfield recently, and you wander around Starfield and you wander off the beaten track and you wander around down the same cave. Every time you go into somewhere to explore, you think, oh, there must be something in here. No, there's fuck all in there. There must be something in there. No, there's fuck all in there as well. But you play Elden Ring. Everything you discover, every little thing that you think, oh, that's hidden away, it's all very crafted and there's things in there to find. It's just amazing game, but... just too long, too hard.
You mean it's a good game, which Starfield isn't? I'm with you. Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah, that's the upshot of it. Well, the weird thing is, maybe it's not weird, but I think I put in about 40-odd hours into Starfield. I was telling you, weren't I, that I was...
Yeah.
I think I was making myself enjoy it, and then I don't know if it was just kind of like, oh, actually, this is all right. To be fair to it, there are some crafted plot lines or crafted side missions, let's say, not main plot. Side missions that are very entertaining for Starfield. And the good thing was I hadn't bought it, I'd playing it on Game Pass. So I'd never felt I was kind of out of pocket or whatever. And I did want to see it through to the end, but then the longer it went on, the longer I thought, I'm missing out on playing other things here. So I kind of called it a day with Starfield in the end. I might go back to it again, it's on Game Pass, so you can dip in whenever you
I just enjoy the fact that in this, 800 years in the future, we still wouldn't have invented bank transfers. So you have to stand in front of some of them to physically hand you money instead of just saying, brilliant.
It just lost a lot of character. I mean, the other ones as well. Sorry, I was going to say, lost a lot of character. And one of the other ones that I played a lot of, Fallout 3, was the total opposite. And it's made by the same bloody company, Fallout 3 is absolutely...
Did you feel like Starfield was made by a committee and not... feels like it was made by a large group of people and not the vision of a few writers who've got this, so it's this completely cohesive world. It just felt... I just thought, why aren't I fighting huge monsters or crazed robots? Why is everything so... And that was the same thing. You were saying you put 40 hours. I put 30 hours in and I was sitting here one night and I just thought, I'm bored. I'm just playing it. Because I'm waiting for it to kick into gear, and it just doesn't. It just never did for me at all.
Yeah, you'd think aliens, you'd think robots, you'd think all the cool stuff that you'd seen in the previous, Fallout 3, New Vegas, all the kind of nuance to where you were in the world. You know, like if you're in a certain part of, say, Fallout 3, you're going to come across these type of people or this little colony, and they're there for a reason, and they've set up a, like a little.
And there's like environmental, like how come, right? In every Fallout and Bethesda game and like Skyrim and stuff, you can like in say Fallout New Vegas, wherever, you see a fucking hut. You go on the upper hill and you see a hut and you go there and have an amazing experience, right? How can I have more fun in a hut in Fallout than I can in an entire fucking solar system in Starfield?
You know, yeah, it's, just like, it's ridiculous. It's actually bizarre. You go, you find a hut and then there's a little trapdoor. And then you just go like, down there and you've...
Cave system.
Cave system.
And then there's like a secret stash and it's like, oh, this used... And then you read a couple of notes. Oh, this used to be like a smuggler's den. Oh, this is cool. Oh, there's a couple of new... You know, there's something, not just...
Yeah, there's something, nothing. Whereas all the caves and all the little shit in Starfield is just the repeat. Almost like it's procedurally generated, but I don't think it is. And it's just... I think it. They tried to go too big and then realised, fuck... We can't do this, but they never shrunk the size of the, universe.
I just can't believe that you can't sit in your little spaceship and like look at a planet and just fly there casually. Like you have to go through loading screens. It just felt like I had a book and I was just like turning through pages whenever I went to a different planet and reading. It wasn't like there was no cohesion in it. I know we're going off topic now. I could talk about this for ages.
I agree with that. It's frustrating. It's absolutely frustrating, but... So most hours, more recently Elden Ring, Fallout 3 over the course of time. I put a lot of time into Half-Life 2, which I absolutely adore, and it's a great game. And then the Football Manager stuff from 2010 to 2015 was a big time for Football Manager. So hundreds of hours on each installment easily.
I think for me when it comes to... And I don't even see them as time sinks because I've purely enjoyed my time with it. Like New Vegas and Fallout 3, we talked about. Fallout 3 and New Vegas are the two only Bethesda games that I've gone through both twice to 100% just to get back into the world and like, oh, no, I really like this. I'm going to do it again. And, Witcher 3 is one I've played twice straight through.
Bloody hell.
I love that. And I've actually, the other day, what did I do? For Valentine's Day, Faye bought me the Witcher cookbook, right?
Oh, nice.
So I was looking through it, and I'm reading, and I've already started, after reading a cookbook on Witcher recipes, I've started reading the books again, and I'm thinking, I know this is going to lead up to me playing the games again.
He's back in again.
But the other ones here, there are sort of two outliers, are 7 Days to Die, PC game I've played on and off for like 10 years since it's released.
Really? Is that how long it's been out? Jesus Christ.
Because I played it on PC. Sorry?
Is it still in early access or not?
Of course it's still in early access. Not a full release. So I played it on the PS4 with co-op Chris used to write for us.
Yeah.
And then we kind of stopped doing it. And then I got back into it with my brother playing on PlayStation because it was on Game Pass again. Xbox. Right.
Then
we realized, oh, actually on PC, it's much more upgraded and modern.
Right.
So he bought a laptop to play it, and now that's like our brotherly game that we play to catch up. Like,
once a week,
we'll just smash into it for like 7 hours. You know, if Faye's visiting family, it's like, right, let's get a session in on 7 days. And the other one, which is a Kingdom Come Deliverance, I know that the creative director of the game had his personal views on certain things, but when I got the game, I think again it was on Game Pass at one point, I was playing it on the Xbox One. And I must have played that game for like 200 hours.
Jeez.
And I swear to God, a quarter of that at least was just watching loading screens. But I kid not. It was when Faye was pregnant. So she would be napping all the time and having an accident. And she'd, bless her, like, you know, what's it called? Heartbeat all the time, lying down a lot because her back was aching.
Yeah.
And she would do her thing. And then I'd be like, oh, just check on Kingdom Come Deliverance. And the music was so nice. And she likes watching RPGs.
Yeah.
So I've got really fond memories of that game. And I actually emailed the developers and said, look, I write for Games Freezer and I do vinyl reviews. And I said, I just would love to talk about your album because it means so much to me and reminds me of my birth of my son. And they said, they sent me a really lovely email saying, even if you don't talk, you don't have to review it because we've got none to sell. We've got a couple in the office. We just want you to have one. So I've got the vinyl of Kingdom Come Deliverance soundtracks. That's really special as well. So that's a game that means to, again and again. I'm thinking, it's been a while. Axels 3, I could play through it again. So
I'm looking at it now and I'm getting tempted to buy it. Yeah,
you're getting twitches in your britches. Yeah, no, yeah. Definitely. It'll be really nice and updated now as well, and on a Series X or whatever, it'll run really well. So.
Yeah, that looks cool. That looks very cool. Yeah, all these are games that I'll be banging all over, I reckon. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Oh, man.
It's funny in Kingdom Come as well, because everyone's just got a really thick, like, Somerset accent. So yeah, Henry is like, he's from Bristol, the first guy. Well, it's obviously set in Czech Republic or whatever it is, but it's everyone, all the character, the voices are all English. So
I like the guy who's voicing the latest Final Fantasy. Oh, God. Is it six? I don't know if it's 16. I'm not a Final Fantasy guy, as you.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm lost as well.
I think he's 16, and he's a very very English guy, and you just think it almost doesn't fit. You know, that is a very English guy playing the lead role. I can't remember the name of the character actually who's in the latest one, but he's a massive Final Fantasy geek as well, so it's his dream job to voice.
Oh, that's cool.
And just him being English is kind of mental, because you expect it to kind of be like a Japanese kind of voicing or whatever, but
I remember my favorite memory of like an accent in a video game is a running joke between me and my brother, like every time you hear anyone Welsh in a game, that they're either like in really poor, or they're like an evil witch or something. And like in The Witcher, and I was playing, I think it was Risen 2 maybe years ago on the PS3, and there's a part in the game where you get like knocked out and you wash up on the shore, and there's like African, well, fantasy versions of African tribesmen dancing around this big fire with the big kind of wooden tiki masks.
Yeah.
Like these black, muscular guys with spears, and they come up to you on the beach and pick you up, and you're like, who are you? And they're, all right there, boy, what are you doing? And I said, of course he's from Tredegar. Why wouldn't he be? It just tickled me. Yeah,
quality. He's from Swansea, that bloke. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, not from that place near Swansea called Gosainen. I love hearing Welsh accents in video games.
Spot on. Right. So where are we at?
Well, I think, should we stop after this one and then maybe go from seven? Because this is weird. I'm loving how long this is taking, to be honest.
This is cool. Yeah. I do like this. I've enjoyed every minute of it so far. So yeah, very good. Very good. Right. So we're going to do this one as our last one. Then,
and then we'll, for obviously people listening, we'll do a part two soon. Well, we say soon. It'll probably be the 20th anniversary of Games Reason. Our voices will be deeper and gravelier.
This is it. Yeah.
So the ultimate question for today, the final question is, what's a really popular game everyone seems to love but you don't like?
This is probably a good one, to finish on as well, I think. So I put down, and it still stands, even though I've sort of completed this a while, but the Pokemon games, very much so, because I just feel like whenever I've played them, they say they're kind of like an RPG, but they never really feel like an RPG. And there's so much grinding and so many boring bits. I just can't understand the appeal. I think the appeal must be the catch them all. It's got to be that's what people like about them. I just don't know what it is. It's really, really bothered me, actually. Because I bought the Switch Let's Go Pokemon game. I can't even say it properly. And I tried it and I really wanted to like it, and I thought, right, this could be one that the girls could play. Like, got two daughters. I thought, this would be good. Yeah, it was rubbish. And I gave it to them and they weren't really that interested either. And I was like, it's a real shame. I just can't get my head around it. Strange.
I don't, with the Pokemon games, my last, because I know they've done a lot over the years, but I think I remember playing the original ones, like Pokemon Red and Blue on the Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
And enjoying those. And I've got a saved game relatively recently in one of Faye's Game Boys that she's got lying around in various rooms of the house.
Yeah.
But the original one is, did you ever play the original Game Boy one?
I think I played it, but I didn't own it. I think it was one of those.
It would be a great game if you had it just like in your toilet on the windowsill.
Yeah.
Sill.
Yeah, I see.
Right? Or like on a commute or something. There's a real simplicity to the original Pokemon game that's really cool, with how you can
You know, it's so stripped back because of the hardware it's on. But then, because I don't really give a hoot about the Pokemon franchise in and of itself, and I've got no kids of that age to, you know, to pull me into it. It's like, it just seems like, I feel like I've just missed the boat. It's like, I feel the same way about Pokemon as I do about Dragon Ball Z. I'll never play Dragon Ball Z. I just feel like, or Attack on Titan. I feel like, right, I've missed the boat on that. It doesn't really interest me. There's other things I'd rather do. And I noticed your next one is early Zelda games.
Yeah, and I think that's probably more to do with never owned a NES and the first Nintendo console.
Oh, so you mean like the early, like
Early. Yeah. I mean, even the SNES Link to the Past. I think that's the one on the Super Nintendo, isn't it? Yeah, Link to the Past. It's a beautiful looking game, but it's one I never, because I didn't have the connection to the earliest ones. Then I never bothered playing the Super Nintendo one, even though it's one of the most like good looking
celebrated games of all time.
Yeah, celebrated games.
Do you think
part
of your problem with the Zelda franchise is the fact that Link isn't signed to Charlton Athletic? And that would be what sucked you in if you played for like Ipswich Town. You'd be like, oh, okay.
If there was a transfer list involved and negotiations around the Master Sword, then maybe I would have got involved. But it's not for me.
You discovered a spreadsheet about the January transfer window. You're like, oh, okay.
I'm in. Those are the ones that immediately spring to mind anyway, being popular and whatnot.
With Zelda for me, I've watched people play the SNES Zelda game and I can see why people love it so much. And again, the early Zeldas and the ones on the Game Boy are great. But when the N64 Ocarina of Time, I think I got quite close to finishing it. But again, it just kind of wore me down. And it was almost like a self-inflicted wound, is what happened was I played The Witcher 3 and that finished. And then I immediately moved straight on to Breath of the Wild. And I was completely and utterly burned out on RPGs.
I remember this actually. I remember you saying, because I was playing at the same time when I think.
And I said, I had to just play indie games for like 6 months. I had to play little games. I said, I can't do that again.
Golf Story.
It kind of broke me a bit in RPGs for a while, but and I just, again, because I've missed that one and I've got other things I'd rather be doing in terms of like reviews for the site, I don't think I'll ever go back to it. I don't feel like I'll ever need to.
No, this is it. It's a massive time investment, and that's the thing with some of those bigger games. So it's nice to clean the palette with some indie gold in it sometimes and just build up to the next big one whenever you can.
And for me, like the popular game people love but I don't, is I really struggle with, like, I'm not competitive at all, so I struggle with like truly competitive games like Smash Brothers, Mario Kart, where like the fun is in like laughing and pointing, like, yeah, fuck you sort of thing. I don't really work in that way, so I just, if I lose, I think I'm just not as good as you guys. It doesn't bother me, and I don't know, I just don't get the buzz that I see other people get from those, especially Smash Brothers, pushing someone off a shelf.
I just don't get it. I really don't get it.
Oh, you're the same. I just don't. It's
honestly, watching Smash Brothers and trying any of those kind of brawler games. I've tried one recently. I can't remember what it's called.
Even stuff like Power Stone on the Dreamcast, like, you know, retro ones that were my era sort of thing. I think I just don't really.
No,
it doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. It's the opposite to, say, like Street Fighter. It just felt like there's no, well, there is skill involved, obviously, but it's just not evident immediately that there's much skill involved in these kind of like Smash Brothers likes, you know, just jumping around on a platform, pushing each other and jumping high. And I didn't get it. But I love my Mario Karts, though. I do, although that's more born out of loving the Super Nintendo, the original Super Mario Kart, which in my opinion is like the best. And we used to play battle mode. And the way we used to do it is we had a league. So there was four of us. And you'd play against each other in battle mode. And if you beat someone, how many balloons you had left on your cart was your balloon difference. So not only did you get points for winning, you've got balloon difference as well. So it's like goal difference in football, back to football.
Jesus, look at it. You're basically just spreadsheet rich, aren't you? That's what this is all about.
Yeah, and we used to have it up on the wall. There was like a league table and we used to update it every time we played. And that was the best. I mean, Mario Kart for me peaked then.
It must have been hard to see that on the wall, to push past all the girls who'd come around because they fancy you so much from your nerdiness.
Yeah, they're looking for my XE games again. Yeah, they come around again to peek at your cassettes, Rich. Yeah.
Playing with their bubble gum. Yeah. XE games. Like, oh, well, you come to the right place, girls.
Yeah, yeah. I've just been to Rossi's. Yeah, absolutely. So, Yeah. a bit of Mario Kart, mate. You can't beat. Although I've played Mario Kart 8 a lot, it's not the same. It's not very. It feels a bit weird. I don't know. It's a bit too. I don't know what it is. It just doesn't feel right. I don't know what that. I can't put my finger on what is wrong with Mario Kart 8, but I don't know. Just a money maker maybe, and they've just not put any thought into how they progress it properly. I don't know what it is.
I couldn't tell you the difference from like double, because my favorite Mario, if I had to choose my favorite game to play like with you now, it would probably be Double Dash on the GameCube, because a little bit different. But that would be my, but like I don't really know any difference from like then on, quite frankly.
Right.
I don't,
but
I remember really being taken with Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed when it came out.
That's a lot of people say that about that. Yeah, I've never played it. I don't think I've played it. But it was
Rupert, our old writer, who was a good friend of mine, who pointed out why I like it, because he is a big Mario Kart fan, some would say Nintendo fanboy. But I said, I really like Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed. I think it's just better than Mario. It was just very clearly better than Mario Kart. And he said it's because it's got such an expansive single player mode.
Oh, right.
So the co-op is great, but also, you know, like how often do people sit down and just play Mario Kart unless they're just practicing to beat their mates, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
But with Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed, it's got this whole, I wouldn't say RPG element, but all these sort of things you have to do, kind of like the Hot Wheels Unleashed game, where there's like, you can sit down and go through like an entire campaign and it takes ages. And I was like, I quite like that aspect.
That is pretty cool. Yeah, I think with the early Mario Kart, my big thing with it was just trying to get all of the cups. And again, that's almost like a primitive story mode in your own head.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You start
absolutely.
Off with your mushroom cup or whatever, and you work your way up and you do your CCs. And I used to play a lot of like single player like that. And then you get to know the tracks, so when you do play your mates, you obviously you know all the little shortcuts and whatnot. But
I find that the mode 7 on the SNES, though, because I've played it relatively recently, it's a bit much for me. Like the way the ground moves just makes me feel a bit weird. It's like,
it's like migraine inducing looking at it now. I tried to get my girls to play it and they just couldn't work out what was going on. They're like, Dad, what's this doing? It's kind of like the whole thing's turning.
The whole, you're staying still, but everything's turning around you and it's quite discombobulating. You're like, I don't know.
As soon as you see through like the illusion, then you can't unsee it as well, can you? Like, oof. This is very weird, especially Rainbow Road. Jesus.
You need to get him on Double Dash, mate. That's what.
Bit of Double Dash, back up to Double Dash.
Yeah, the GameCube.
I had that for a while. I think I got a GameCube for a little bit, and then I quickly got rid of it. I don't know why I got one and then got rid of it. I think I saw it in a charity shop, bought it, got a couple of games for it, played on it a little bit, and then, I don't know why, and then I sold it.
One of the things I realised a few years ago is with the difference between, and I did not know this at the time, between the game. Just get it on GameCube because it'll just run better. I mean, the controller's a piece of shit, but you know, you gotta, pros and cons.
Oh dear. Right. So, that's us, mate. That is us.
Yeah.
Installment.
I know, I didn't think this would be a two-parter, possibly three, depending on how many words we.
This is it. Yeah. We've only got to number 7 out of 17. Jesus. Plus some little extra ones on the end as well. So.
Good.
Sure, this is good. This is going to be a series, Nice. So,
I'll love you, Olivia. Thank you very much. We'll do this again next May.
Next May, 2026.
we'll sort something out. But that's it for part one. So love to the family, and I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, big love. Thanks, mate. It's been a pleasure.
I absolutely loved it.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Right, I'll speak soon. Cheers, Britt.
I'm going to knock Championship Manager up.